5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Rich Rosendahl here. We are back for another episode of Let's Dig In. This week we had a good friend, an incredibly talented chef, Mr. Curtis Duffy. All of you are probably familiar with him, with his restaurant Grace, and the incredible documentary that you can see on Netflix. And in that documentary, not only did he kind of give you a backstage pass to what it's like opening up and cooking at that level, but also a lot of his personal stories, his personal upbringings, which really made the story so much more personable. But beyond that, he's an incredibly talented chef. He's worked with some of the most talented chefs in the United States. Obviously, spent time working with Chef Grant Achatz at Alinea, also with Chef Charlie Trotter. He's just got an incredible resume, and he's a gifted, very talented, but also very humble chef. So obviously, opening up a fine dining restaurant during normal conditions would be crazy. But what is it like opening it up in 2020 with this pandemic going on and all of these new normals, if you will, all these things that have kind of been thrusted upon us? What is it like trying to navigate not even just a regular restaurant, but something that's operating at such a high level, like his new restaurant ever? And the restaurant is open, and he gave us some really great insight as to what it's like, things, maybe changes that he's making, how he's staying motivated, and it was an incredible episode. So without further ado, let's dig in with Chef Curtis Duffy. Enjoy. Hey everybody, just want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. This show would not be possible without the support of our good friends and sponsors. This week we have Comey, which is the ultimate recipe and menu management software. You can find more information about Comey at www.comey.com. That's K-O-H-M-E-E. And it is the software that we use to manage all of our recipes and our menus. And it's an amazing software. Check it out. And also the International Sous Vide Association. They actually have their summit coming up here in August. You're going to want to check that out. I'll be a keynote speaker. There's also an incredible list of sous vide experts that are on the panel. They're going to be doing demonstrations and speaking. And now this year, it was supposed to be in San Francisco. However, it will be a virtual summit. It's still going to be amazing. Check it out at their website. Chef Curtis Duffy, a good friend and one of the most talented creative chefs in the United States and really even abroad that's cooking today. And he is a 3-star Michelin chef, I believe 4 consecutive years, James Beard Award winner. You've worked with some incredible icons in the industry. I mean, with Grant, obviously, being one of them. I mean, you really right. played huge roles in some of the most impressive brands and restaurants throughout the country. So obviously, I talked with the team earlier about the Grace for Grace documentary, which was outstanding. And I think, obviously, emotional. I mean, I felt like a lot of people that we've talked to, a lot of people really felt moved in watching it. You can tell that you, not only just with your food, but just telling your story. I mean, you really put it out there. And I, one of the reasons we wanted to reach out to you is because I feel like you represent for a lot of people, even almost kind of like the hope for fine dining and that high level of service. I mean, a lot of people are going to point to somebody like you and say, well, if he can't do it, then, you know, what does it look like? What's the future look like? And we have had a lot of conversations in the last couple of months. I know everybody's kind of pretty much COVID-ed out, but the reality is it's still here. And we really wanted to kind of peel back the orange a little bit and just see where do you see fine dining going? And what are you doing to prepare and adjust and pivot? And obviously hear some about the restaurant. That was kind of like our motive for kind of reaching out to you, is we feel that you have a lot of people are really kind of be looking to people like you, to, as an indicator of now what with you know, fine dining, something that we all have such an affinity to. So can we start off maybe with just maybe kind of just give us a an update of like where you're at now in like the whole sequence of the year and ever, the restaurant, like, and has any of that changed as far as the timing with everything that 2020 has thrown at us?
Yeah. So we are in the about 70% complete with construction when COVID hit in early March. And, you know, it was a blessing in disguise, if you will, in hindsight now that this is kind of taken its path through, you know, the entire world and the United States. But, you know, we, like I said, we're in the midst of construction and blessed that we weren't open yet. You know, it gave us a little bit more time to prepare. It gave us more time, you know, to hire the right people and, you know, construct our team to where we really wanted it to be and where it is today. But fast forward, you know, we're about a week away from opening the doors and, you know, a lot of things have changed with the way we handle and approach the restaurant, obviously in the greatest safety for our clients and for our staff, of course. We had to make all those changes.
Is there anything that you like now, is there anything that you're kind of looking at and saying that this is the biggest hurdle that you're saying, like, is it the adjusting of the dining room capacity, or are you kind of looking at just getting the customer's confidence there? Like, I mean, you're seeing it at a very personal level being in Chicago, but is there anything that you feel like is probably the biggest hurdle? Like these are the things that if we can just get around this, I feel like we'll be on the right path.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can speak for probably every restaurant in the city of Chicago. It is a capacity issue for the city, probably countrywide, at least here in the United States. You know, with Chicago, we're at a 25% capacity, which just opened 2 weeks ago, meaning, you know, 25% of your occupancy is allowed. They give you a window of 2 hours for the guests to be there, and they really want to maximize that two-hour window and try to be in and out. So you're not lingering. You're not just sitting around. If you were at a bar or a table, they really want to push you out. The struggles that we're having, well, not really struggles, but our restaurant was designed already with tables that are, I mean, 6 feet apart. The idea of our restaurant has always been that every table should feel like it's your own restaurant and you're not overhearing right. conversation of the table beside you, because we are spaciously that far apart. What does hurt us is the number of guests that we're allowed to have into the restaurant. So from a financial standpoint, that's a burden on the restaurant, you know? So put that in the mix, and now all of a sudden you're adjusting the amount of product you're buying. You're adjusting the amount of staff you can hire. A lot of things just start. It's a snowball effect, basically.
Well, I do remember seeing a few pictures. I think it was like pretty recent. It was like a glimpse into what I believe was the dining room, and that's one thing that did strike me. I was like, wow, it looks very spacious and comfortable, and I do feel like kind of having each guest feeling like they kind of have like their own little private area, their own little ecosystem. I feel like that does, like, that's a compelling message to kind of get out there to customers, to kind of give them that, you know, it's one thing to go into a very busy, almost like food hall, where the proximity is completely different versus, you know, experiences like what you have to offer.
Yeah, you know, it's all about the guest safety and whatever we can do to ease their mind the moment they walk in the door, even making the reservation with the guidelines and the things that we have on our website to kind of hopefully that they'll feel a little bit more confident walking into the door. And once they're in our hands, then we embrace them in a loving manner, obviously with we've stepped up the details of not only cleaning, but making sure that they have the right things at their fingertips, sanitation, wipes, gel, soap, you know, bathrooms that are easy accessible, and all those things that, you know, I think a lot of restaurants take for granted the cleanliness anyways. I mean, we've just upped our game across the board.
Curtis, what's the location that Ever will be, and like what made you pick that location in the city?
Yeah, we're in the Fulton market, so we're 1340 Fulton Street. The location, the restaurant for me has always been a destination, so we really looked at a lot of spaces, as we did with Grace. Location, it had to be a blank canvas. That's really what we were looking for. It had to be a new build or a blank canvas that didn't need much architectural or structural construction to it. We didn't want to add a lot of money back into old buildings or things like that. So we were really focusing on basically a blank canvas, so then we could create what we wanted to create.
So, I got to say, just on a personal note, I mean, our whole tagline just with the company has always been food, inspiration, and adventure. I mean, obviously, like what we all do is very food, culinary driven. Obviously, I'm always looking for new adventure. I mean, you definitely are one of those people that you're not stand still. It's evolve, make things better. But also inspiration, the inspiring part. I mean, I was really impressed that, if you look at a bell curve of somebody's career and their runway, I mean, so many people would have pointed to you having your last restaurant and these accolades and all these things that you've done. And hey, I mean, you guys, that situation closing and then, and leaving from that and keeping the momentum and finding that energy to go and do what you're doing now. I got to tell you, I just think from watching from afar, again, we've known each other over the years, but just watching from afar, I just think that it's amazing. And just, hats off to you. And then, going through this year, I mean, you definitely have a drive that I think a lot of people can look at that and say, hey, sometimes the adversity, sometimes these challenges, you have them too. Everybody does, but right. You kind of make a decision. It's like, look, I'm going to reinvent. I'm going to, replan and being kind of nimble. But I just think that it's amazing that you've kind of gone, just kind of kept taking that bell curve up is impressive.
Well, I'm not finished, I had a lot of goals set for myself personally and for the restaurant that I previously worked at, Grace. it's tough. That's a tough one. I mean, it still stings, but Grace was my baby, and you put yourself in a position as a young cook that you make the wrong choice with a business partner, and the business deal goes bad. And look, you live and learn from it, but that was one of the hardest choices I've had to make, was to walk away from that restaurant. And I tell you, I put everything I could do to try to salvage that relationship and salvage the restaurant. I didn't want to give it up. That was, like I said, it was my baby. But in hindsight, it was probably the best decision I ever made too. I my voice is not finished. I have a lot that I still want to accomplish within the food world, personally and professionally. There's a lot that I want to do. So for me to walk away from there and say, okay, now I'm done, maybe I need to do something not as challenging or not as forward thinking, then that's only letting myself down in the end of the day. I know internally that I have a fire greater now than it ever was, and I'm ready to, I'm just ready to destroy the world in a great way. I feel like there were chains held on me for some time, and it didn't allow me to do what I wanted to do. So now I have complete freedom. I have complete support all the way around me, and now it's limitless the way I look at it.
That's great.
And we had that same vision design in this restaurant. It was limitless. And what are we going to do with it? How do we make it different than every other restaurant that you walk into, from the moment you walk in the door to the moment you leave. Everything's got to, we look at it differently and try to change those things. So
do you feel like anything about like your style or the style of the food has changed, or do you feel like you've kind of like kept going, but maybe some of the same principles? Like what about that food? How would you kind of explain the style of the food?
Well, I call the style of food, it's a personality cuisine. It's a purpose-driven cuisine. It's ingredient-driven. Technique to me is secondary. I've always thought that way. I've always felt like if you're starting with the best ingredients, you end up with the great result. But if you're starting with shitty ingredients, no matter what technique you're applying to, you're still going to have shitty ingredients. You're still, at the end of the day, it's a shitty product. So
right.
That's, the cuisine is always focused, ingrediently driven. So if I said that I had to walk away from Grace and change my style of cooking, that to me would never, I would never do that. Ever is going to be an evolution of what Grace was. It's, as a chef, you're always pushing forward. You're always driving to be better the next day. At least for me, I am. I speak for myself. You know, so if Grace was open today, the dishes you would see that are coming out of Ever would probably be those dishes that would,
right.
That would, it would just a it's representation of who I am. It's what I love to eat. It's the way I love to cook. That's why you'll never see shrimp on the menu. I'm allergic to it. I don't like it. So I'm never going to have it on the menu.
Do you ever look back at like any of your old like culinary pictures and like what you're doing now? I was like going yeah. through some old pictures the other day, not on purpose, but I was just like, whoa.
it's great because, you know, we're about halfway through a cookbook at Grace, and we had to put the pause button on it. And even with, I remember Grant saying this to me when we were working, when we were doing the Alinea book, he's like, when we were at Trio together, he said to me, he was like, I don't want to do a book because that is, it locks you in that time period. And right. you always go back and you go, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
How the hell? So Michael, my business partner, he's on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook anymore, but he manages my account on Facebook, and he gets these clippets of old stuff that pops up, and he always screenshots and send it to me. He's like, look at this. I'm like, what the hell were we doing back then? But, you know,
That's funny.
It is funny to go back and look, and, you know, I have a lot of notebooks that I keep ideas and things like that in, and you go back and search back for just maybe inspiration here and there, and you look at it and you go, I don't even know what this means or what is it, what was I thinking then? You would love to know where I was when I wrote that down and what the hell was going through my head. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's bad, but there are ideas down on paper at least.
Chef, I have a question. One is actually coming from our audience. I've been texting everyone that we were doing a podcast with you, and everyone is asking how they could go or apply and work with you ever. And the other question is going to be, why did you pick that name? I'm always like amazed from every company why they pick their names. And just looking at the at Netflix, at the documentary that you have, I understand now why you picked Grace, but why do you pick Ever now?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, they can apply at info@ever-restaurant.com.
Do they have to have any kind of like culinary background? Like, because some of the best chefs, sometimes they just say like, okay, you have to work before you come to work with us in a different Michelin star restaurant. Is that how you roll too? Okay.
Not at all. I actually prefer somebody who's completely green, because that gives them, you know, the ability to be malleable, and for them to work in our kitchen, we can shape them however we want to shape them. And
right.
there's not a lot of bad habits that we have to break and, you know, get them to think the way that we think and work the way that we work. So,
right.
You know, as long as they're passionate and have that fire and love for food, I can give you 10 minutes in the kitchen to tell you if you're going to work in the kitchen or not, or at least work in my kitchen or not. So
right. Awesome.
just passion, you know, the love for food and wine and the food world and cuisine.
Great.
And the second part of that question about Ever, the name, you know, we went down a rabbit hole of names, as probably most chefs when they're naming their restaurants, kind of look at it as like you're naming your child, your first kid, or it's tough. It's tough because we get these questions every time we do an interview. It's why the name, why the name? So a lot of people feel like when they name it, there has to be a meaning behind it. For Grace, there wasn't a meaning behind it other than the definition of elegance and refinement, and that's and gracefulness, what we wanted to extend to our guests and give our guests on a nightly basis. So that's where that name came from. With Ever, the same thing, you know, we wanted the best of everything to be my Ever. So you always say to yourself, you know, you remember that concert we went to? It was the best damn concert venue that we've ever been to. It's
right.
We went to this restaurant in Paris and it was the best damn service that we've ever had. And it's always that Ever keeps popping up and popping up and popping up. So I thought I wanted to make all of this my Ever, like everything, the best china, the silverware, the stemware, service, you know, the acoustics in the restaurant, the ambiance, everything about that needs to be.
I was, to be honest, Ever. I was reading an interview probably that you did, I have no idea how long ago, with the Michelin Guide. And one of the questions that they ask you, if you can define food or like your entire experience as one word, the word that you said it was everything. So I was thinking, trying to kind of like put them together. And I was thinking that it was something about that, but I wanted to hear it from you.
Yeah, I think that answer was, I don't remember the question, but yeah, probably asking me about food and wine and what does it mean to you? And I'm like,
right.
It means everything to me. Absolutely. It's my world. It's a day and night. It's you're embraced in this world. And, you know, some people love it. Some people hate it. For me, I love it. And on a day that I don't think about being in a restaurant or being surrounded by people who are just as passionate as I am.
Curtis, there's a lot of people out there, and I talk to a lot of restaurants that are maybe they're not like super high end, but they're full service, you know, they're nice restaurants and stuff like that. I mean, do you think that is there anything that you think that are things that restaurants should be doing right now? I mean, do you think that they should look at their menus? Do you think that they should look at their job descriptions or their, what do you think, like, for people that are out there that are just kind of scratching their head saying, like, now what, you know, what's the next thing? And I mean, I definitely think there's, for fine dining, there's a lot of aspiring chefs out there that they look at somebody like you and they're like, I want to do that. And it's like, well, what does that look like? You know, I mean, have you thought about maybe like our restaurants? Like, what can we do to disrupt our own, you know, our own system to be able to still give guests a great experience and we love what we do? I mean, what have you been thinking about like with that for other restaurants?
Yeah, that's a tough question because I've always been in the mindset of not to change in the sense of when things are rough and you're going through those moments to not change and stay true to what you built, staying true to the design of the menu, the flow of the menu, the way the restaurant was designed in itself. And that's just my mindset. That doesn't mean I haven't thought about other ways that other people can change. But for me, it's always been like, those restaurants that are on the edge of closing and they're constantly changing and confusing people. They don't know, okay, are you a takeout? Are you a dine-in? Are you all these things? People are confused. And when the people are confused, they don't want to go there because you don't know what to expect walking in the door.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a really good, really good.
But that's, you know, that's my own personal opinion. I don't know what we can do if you're able to do carry out and that provides income to keep you open until, you know, this thing passed, then that's what you should be doing. If it's you know, I don't know. There's, I just think like everybody's just scrambling to find a way to make it, work.
Well, whoever would have thought, and I know, I'm sure you saw, you probably maybe even had some of it already, but with Grant and some of his kind of carry out, I mean, whoever thought you'd see that at Alinea, was pretty wild to see that. But I mean, I know that this whole pandemic has asked so much of us, and really 2020 in general has just thrown us like uppercut after uppercut.
For sure.
But it's been crazy. Do you talk to a lot of the other like restaurateurs and industry people like in Chicago? I mean, do people feel like there's kind of a sense of like, hey, I feel like things are starting to kind of come back, or is there still kind of like uncertainty? I mean, what's kind of the vibe with the industry in general in Chicago?
Yeah, you know, like restaurateurs that have a handful, you know, maybe 2 to 3 plus restaurants, you know, there's a handful of those groups in the city, and then there's a handful that have, you know, 10 plus restaurants. They're all kind of reconcepting a little bit, changing the names into something else. Maybe the steakhouse now is something completely different. I don't know if there is a sense of comfort yet with everyone that says it's going to come back around. I drove home last night. It was probably around 11 o'clock, and the bars seem to be doing well. The outside patio seems to be doing well, but we're in the Midwest. This is a limited time, especially in Chicago. October rolls around, and if you don't have inside dining, you have carryout. You know, that's it. You know, then you're competing with everybody else because everybody's doing the same thing. You know, you're competing. It's not sustainable. It's a Band-Aid. It's a quick fix at this point, you know, to muscle through everything to get, you know, past to hopefully where you can get back to kind of where you were with operating a restaurant, you know. We haven't, like I said, you know, we were fortunate to not be open. So there's been talks around the city about, you know, California just went back to no dining inside, no bars, none of that. So if that moves to Chicago and that happens in this major city and we're open, then we're going to be forced to think about how to maintain with 40 staff here already working every day. So how do we maintain that and remain this restaurant that we just built and just opened, you know, or just going to open?
How do you stay motivated? I mean, what does Curtis do on like a day off? I mean, are you big into exercising? Is there any books that you're reading right now? Are you a big podcast person? Like what kind of stuff do you do in your free time?
Yeah. I study martial arts and have for many, many years.
Really?
So that's a real tension or stress relief for me, and I enjoy doing that, not only on my days off but the days that I'm working as well. That's for me. In the hospitality industry, we're always giving as chefs. We're constantly giving, but we're never giving to ourselves. And for me, I think it's important that at least an hour or two every day my phone is off, usually in the morning, where I'm not this distracted, and I'm giving to myself mentally and physically, so then I can take that and give more to my staff and my guests. And, you know, because if I'm tired and worn out and exhausted because I'm not eating well or not healthy, that I think that it's just a snowball effect into my staff, you know.
Right.
And I enjoy motorcycles. I have a couple of motorcycles that I enjoy riding. I have my daughters. So I'm remarried and I have 2 stepchildren that I adore, and my life is full. It's full. It's, you know, it's a blessing. It's awesome. So I have very little personal time, but when I do have that personal time, I make it my personal time with no phone distractions, no other distractions, but for me.
When you, when you mentioned the, martial arts and, for whatever reason, maybe because I saw on Instagram the other day, Hoist Gracie like kind of came up in something, and he's obviously like back in the day, he was like really big in like UFC and stuff.
Yeah.
But I just remember only because again, I think of like way earlier on in our career, I think about when, and it's really not too long ago, but when UFC matches and stuff used to be on like pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And it would be like, it'd be like $80 for, you know, this match, and you pay and you watch match, it, yeah. and it, you're like, and it finally comes on, and it would be like 30 seconds or 20 seconds, like Hoist Gracie or whatever.
Yeah.
But
sounds like a Mike Tyson fight too.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. He, by the way, it is crazy though, but he's still, I mean, he looks like he's in pretty great shape.
Amazing. Amazing.
I mean, I, man, I don't know, man. I'd scare the hell out of me if he was standing across the ring from me. I don't care
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Just the reputation alone would defeat most people in the ring. You know, they'd already lost before they even stepped in the ring. Just because of who he is and such a legend, such an incredible legend.
I have my son, Lawrence and Liam. That's been one of the things that we got our kids into is the Taekwondo. And yeah. I do feel like it kind of helps with like some discipline and all that, just kind of in confidence. I think it helps out with like the confidence and stuff. That's one thing, man. I wish I would have got into that earlier on. But you know how it is, you get like, there's only so many things you can like really commit yourself to.
Yeah.
And
You know, it's a great discipline. Like you said, like it builds confidence, a great discipline. It teaches you so much. Even just bringing that into the kitchen, those moments and the way you conduct yourself and the way you speak to one another. It's a sport that just the discipline of martial arts and of that alone teaches you so much that you can apply it to so many different aspects of your life.
Do you cook much at home? Like, and when you do have free time, are you more like try to grab stuff from like local restaurants, or do you get any of the meal kits?
I have been now. I haven't been cooking much at home lately, but since this pandemic, I'm trying to support as much as I can by ordering other restaurants as well, because I know
that's great.
I can imagine the struggle. So if I can order something from another restaurant, I'm going to do it. Absolutely. But I do enjoy cooking at home. Not as much as I enjoy cooking in the restaurant, but it's simple, you know.
Is there like any dishes or serviceware, anything that you're kind of like really excited about, like on this next menu? Do you feel like it's kind of more not really necessarily like standout dishes? Is it more like the overall experience is like what is the standout? You know what I mean? And I know you're kind of you think about the holistic experience, but is there anything like on the menu that is like really like this thing I'm really excited about, or anything that's you feel like this is what we're really excited about is going to be like different?
For me, it's ingredient driven as mm-hmm. always. And like I said earlier, I apply technique to things that for me, the guests have to feel a sense of familiarity to every single dish that they're eating. I want them to be able to relate to it. I feel the moment we lose them in that pattern of dining, we lose their interest, and we want them to be intellectually connected throughout the experience. And that starts with walking in the door. And so we created this entire moment where pre-COVID, you would stand underneath, you would be led down this hallway, which you wouldn't see until you got around the corner. 75 to 85 bites that are hanging out of the ceiling and off the wall that as a guest, you could walk up and enjoy all of them if you could eat 75, 80 bites or two or three. You know, there was 15 different varieties of things that you can simply pluck from the ceiling or a beverage from the wall, or, you know, these moments, raspberries bushes going down the hallway that you can pluck blueberries and raspberries off of as you're walking down. So we started that experience pre-COVID. Now that, you know, that's not happening now.
Right.
Well, we do have a different idea for that experience, but it starts there. So again, it's mostly ingredient driven that I'm not that chef that is pulling out these exciting wow factors for the wow factor reasons. You right. know, it's I let the food speak for itself. And, you know, I played it in an organic, very organic fashion that, you know, is somewhat exciting, I guess.
I mean, I think all your presentations over the years, I thought everything was, you know, it's hard to do simplicity really well. And I think that sometimes, yeah. you know, things are beautiful or impressive just in the fact that there's not all these things that you have to do to kind of try to trigger that wow factor. So you definitely clearly have mastered that over the years. Yeah, absolutely. What about like with, I mean, do you feel like with other restaurants in the country, do you think that maybe changing the format as far as like with tasting menus or desserts, do you think that smaller menus are something that is a way for fine dining restaurants to, you know, if we are going through this kind of like this little adjustment period, you know, until things get back to the point where, and I do think that that there is a time we're going to get back to normal. It may take longer than we think. Yeah. But I mean, do you think that maybe kind of just smaller menus could be something that like a fine dining restaurant could, you know, if you have like a, well, even if you have an 8-course tasting menu, can you take that yeah. down to a 5?
Absolutely. Or? I mean, you know, we scaled back. We were going to open with two, you know, 12 to 15 course menus. One was focused 100% on vegetables. The other one had a mixture of, you know, all the worlds of sea and land and vegetables and things like that. We cut back to a single tasting menu to open
okay.
for a couple reasons. One, for cost. Two, for the safety of our guests. Three, if we cut back on the menu size, we didn't have to hire that many employees in the kitchen. Even though right now we're sitting at 12 full staff in the kitchen
okay.
just to produce the menu. We all, well, you and I know how much it takes to produce.
Absolutely. You
know, produce a tasting menu of, you know, there's 15 components on a dish sometimes. So that being said, yeah, small tasting menus, absolutely. They're, you know, four course, 6 course, you know, maybe it's a degustation where you can choose your own couple options of and design your own menu. I think those are all options to get people in the door for sure.
I mean, the one thing, you know, we've had a lot of different guests, on the podcast, and you know, I do feel like people that are able to stay like relevant in their profession and that are well to be successful, the one thing, and I feel like you, I mean, all of your answers, I mean, we all, whether you're a small independent restaurant or you have multiple restaurants, or in whatever business you happen to be in, you're going to hit adversity. Now this year has been epic in the way that adversity has hit all of us, but sometimes like using those adversities, those challenges, it's almost like if you ask the right question, you can still be creative. I mean, you're kind of like, I mean, what I love just kind of listening to you is you're not really surrendering the mission of everything. It's just right. that you've got to be, instead of being like an aircraft carrier and being like, we're going in this direction and we can't really, it takes so much energy to turn. It's more like a speedboat, yeah. you know, and you're, there might be some more of that in the future that we all got to kind of adjust to. But I think that a lot of people can learn from that, and you can apply that to a pizza place. I mean, whatever it is that you're doing, you know, instead of trying to like change every 5 minutes to like who you are, it's like, you still want to, you don't want to give up the DNA of your style and your quality. And really to think through what adjustments look like so that you don't confuse your guest. I mean, I feel like that's why for me, and that's why we love doing these podcasts and having conversations. I mean, we learn so much in the process as well. And I think one of the things that kind of sticks with me that you said earlier is just like not confusing your guest. And
right.
it's almost projecting how the owner is. You know, if you're confused about what it is that you are doing, then it's going to be really hard for your customer to understand that as well. So I really think that's an important and powerful takeaway.
Yeah, it's you know, I learned that about the confusion of the guests years ago when I ran a restaurant where the owner was constantly wanting change. 1 week it was a tasting menu, the next week it was two tasting menus, the following week it's now we have to offer a la carte, you know, reservations only now. No, now you don't need reservations to come in. Now it's Jackie required, but no, now we don't need Jackie. You can wear whatever you want. Constantly. And what was happening was the staff, instead of being able to greet them and embrace them with love and all that, they were greeting the guests and for the first half hour was trying to turn the guests around because they expected something else when they sat down. And now all of a sudden, oh wait, I have to sit down for a 15 course tasting menu, but I thought it was an a la carte menu that we were coming to. And that is a challenge, and that's not fair to the staff because now when these guests leave, they're not coming back.
Right.
They're never going to come back. They're confused. They forget it. So you lose, not only the staff are frustrated because they're constantly trying to turn these people around, but these guests are never coming back, and you lost somebody that, you know, I speak mostly for the restaurants that are, have local clientele that are repeat customers on a, you know, a weekly or monthly basis. You know, you start confusing them, your business is
totally
gone for sure. But we saw that, I saw that firsthand, and I thought to myself, this is because they're confused. They don't know what they want. They don't know what they're coming to. They don't know what they signed up for.
Curtis, what kind of reservation process are you gonna use? Are you using reservations? Are you gonna open them up like, hey, here's for the next month? Is it gonna be like one seating, two seating, multiple? What's that gonna, and where can people make a reservation?
So they can always come to the website at ever-restaurant.com or ever-restaurant. But we're using the platform Talk.
Okay.
A lot of people are familiar with that, where you purchase. So you will go on there and make a reservation. So we'll open it 2 months in advance. So every month to the day, we'll open an extra month. So right now we're booked through September.
That's great, man.
But as COVID moves on and as the city, you know, hopefully opens up that percentage from 25 to 30, 35, 40, and then maybe 50 and 100%, then some reservations will open up. Right now, we're going to be sitting at anywhere from 45 to 50 people a night. But with the percentages opening up, we should be able to drop a few more reservations each night and get some of those people that are on that waiting list into the
restaurant. That's great, though, that you've already, I mean, you've got people that says something, you know, as far as the confidence of people out there, you know, that they feel safe. And I do think the quality of the restaurant, I do think that for consumers, customers, guests, people are going to be looking at safety in a different way. It's kind of like, you know, I want to go to a place that I trust, that I know that they're doing the right thing, you know, and you know, you were even talking about ingredients. I mean, there's something to be said for just knowing like where your vegetables come from or where does this fish come from. And I feel like that's going to be more scrutinized in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. You're absolutely true with that. And you know, it is with those reservations, I'm guessing that they are trusting us already. That's why they booked the reservations. But it's still up to us, even when they get to the door, to, you know, exceed their expectations, or when they leave, that they have 100% trust in the ability of what we're doing here for their safety. So they do want to come back, you know.
So does the restaurant, what is its, the website again, and where can people find out more information? Do you have a personal website as well? Any other places where we can find more information?
I have Instagram and Ever Instagram.
Okay.
But the Ever Restaurant website is ever curtis-restaurant.com.
Jeff.
And Instagram is just Curtis Duffy, and the Ever website or Ever Instagram is Ever Restaurant on Instagram.
And I know, and I only ask just because I know a lot of people out there are going to, if they're not already following, you're going to want to know, but these days there are so many damn platforms and websites and everything that everybody's got to keep track of.
Right.
Sorry, Chris.
For damn sure.
No worries. Chef, I'm always wondering about the different kind of stuff that a chef can make in their entire career or life. I have the opportunity to talk three different years with Ferran Adrià. And one of the things that you just said is what he always is saying in everywhere that he does an event, that is about looking for the right ingredient, and that's how you start a plate. And he usually said too that you can take just one ingredient, let's say asparagus is one of the ones that he uses the most, and just make 10 to 20 different plates with just one asparagus. Sure. So it really surprised me that, and I think it's great. And now he always is talking about the young culinarians, and I want to talk a little bit about that. What would you say to all of them, and how would you say that your experience can impact in their life to get to your restaurant? I don't know if you can understand the question a little bit, but mostly it's going to be about like how they can get to the point that you are right now, because everyone knows that to become a Michelin star restaurant is super hard.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the young cooks that come out of culinary school or young chefs that are just getting started, they're so eager to have a title. They're so eager to be that sous chef. They're so eager to be the chef de cuisine or pastry chef, or, you know, they're title driven, which is something that I think Richie and I didn't experience that when we were younger cooks. I feel like, at least I speak for myself and maybe Richie as well, but it wasn't about a title for me. It was about learning as much as you possibly could learn. You know, for me, it was about putting my head down for 10 years. And then finally, after 10 years, looking up and seeing where I stood amongst people, and going from restaurant to restaurant is also something that I don't think is glamorous. I know a lot of young chefs think that they need to bounce from restaurant to restaurant to put on their resume, oh, I worked for this guy and this guy or this woman. And you know what? I don't even look at resumes. I don't, like I said earlier, I don't really care where you've been, where you worked. Just, I need to see passion and and some love for the food. But, you know, stop chasing the title, stop chasing the money side of it. Learn your craft, understand your craft, dedicate yourself 100% every day to that craft, and just try to be better at what you're doing every single day, and learning as much as you possibly can. And then, you know, I always tell the young guys, once you have that title of a sous chef or chef de cuisine, your cooking side of it, slowly, you're doing less of it every day as you were if you were chef de partie in the kitchen. You know, you're managing people, you're accepting orders, you're inputting things in the database. You're doing a lot of different things that as a young cook, you don't have to do that. And you, as a young cook, you have that ability to just be a sponge and learn as much as you possibly can. If you're stuck behind a computer screen or doing interviews or doing these things that's taking you out of the kitchen and taking away your focus, then I wouldn't say your learning stops, but it certainly slows down, you know, because you're now doing your mind is doing other things.
Right.
So dedication to the craft in the beginning and just have that ultimate love for it. And if you don't feel it, change, get out of it, get out of the business, you know, find something that you really love to do. I always say, like, as a human being, as a chef, as an artist, as a musician, you have a responsibility to yourself first and foremost to be great at something.
Right.
That's your responsibility in life. And if you're not going to be great at what you're doing every day of your life, which is your career, then find something you can be great at doing that, the loving that. If you love motorcycle and you love motocross, do that. If you're an artist and you love painting, do that. Be the best at it. It's no one's going to push you to do that. It's your own responsibility to be great at it.
Right.
So,
and I think it's important to have like the confidence mm-hmm. and the courage to do that, whatever that is, whatever it is that fulfills you. And definitely with like media and the TV over the years, like things have changed that have kind of influenced people into yeah. maybe like you were saying, like taking a title, but at the end of the day, the proof is in the pudding. Like you've got to learn how to season things, how to roast things, how to cook things. Yes. I mean, that's, if you haven't learned how to do that, then, you know, you can't fake that. I mean, I remember back.
I've worked for many chefs that, you know, I would come in as a young cook, and the sous chef who was supposed to be my boss, watching him break down fish or fabricate a chicken or even try to truss a chicken to tie a bird to roast it, couldn't even do that. The very basic fundamentals of cuisine. And this guy is supposed to be my leader, my teacher, my go-to person in the kitchen. And I'm sitting back thinking, I can do all of that. I learned that years ago. I can do that with my eyes closed. Those are the things that the young kids just skip over, because they've been in the restaurants where they only have to open a bag and cut the filet, this, you know, or open the bag, you know, and there you have a steak or a piece of meat. And they don't take the time to learn fabrication and butchery and all the things that are important, that, you know, it's a foundation. You know, as an architect, you don't build a skyscraper with no foundation, without a solid foundation. So how, as a young chef, expect to go from here to there with no fundamentals, no foundation to cook off, you know?
Right.
Sorry to interrupt you, Richie.
No. I was just saying that, kind of reflecting back to the Hanky days of when, you know, working with chefs like that, I mean, it was intense, you know, he had high expectations and it was an intense environment. But I remember, you know, sometimes people, they wouldn't make it. They wouldn't even make it a shift. One guy, I remember he was like, hey, Rich, I'm gonna go upstairs and take the trash out. I'm like, okay, cool, great. I figured he'd be back in like 5 minutes. 10 minutes goes by, 15 minutes goes by, 20 minutes. I'm like, man, I was like, where did Michael go? And I go upstairs, I open up the door, and it's like the trash was like to the sidewalk, and it was like he was gone. Like he just took off, left his knives there and everything. Yeah. Never came back.
Yeah, he didn't care. He's like, keep the knives, I'm out. Yeah. But I mean, we experienced the same thing at Trotters. It was the greatest excuse was, I got to go feed the meter, because back then you had to feed the meter and the coins. Otherwise your car would get towed. You feed the meter and the guy would never come back. It was just like, wow.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's crazy. Cool. Well, what about, I know we're getting kind of wrapping up here, getting kind of pretty close. I always like to just kind of ask a different question, a little bit off topic. What's your favorite kind of music and, any concerts you've been to? I'm just kind of curious, just like personal side, what kind of music do you listen to?
I'm a heavy metal guy.
Man, that's what I figured.
I love all kinds of music, except for country music. I can appreciate some blues some old school country, but I can't do country. It makes my ears bleed. But heavy metal for me, that's where I'm at. Favorite artist in that genre would be Danzig and Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, we are style. we are totally from cut from that same cloth, and maybe it's just a generational thing. But I don't know if I'm like not a good role model or anything. But even like dropping my kids off every once in a while, I'll put on some like pretty heavy stuff, and my kids like it. Like I'll be like, this is Pantera, and we're just gonna listen to this just for like 5 minutes.
Exactly.
They're like, this is great, Daddy. Put the window down.
That's awesome. Hell yeah.
Yeah,
that's great. Cool. Look, I mean, I've always say with kids, like, you shouldn't change your world to make it easier for them. You brought them into this world, man. Like, don't change what you're doing. Let them listen to that music. My kids listen to them. You know, that's the way it is. I feel.
Yeah, that was totally an emotion connection, an emotional connection with that music evokes with people. So,
yeah, and it's funny because when people think of maybe and listening to the dark heavy metal stuff, and then you step into the kitchen and it's
tranquil,
quiet, you hear a damn pin drop, and people are just moving with the ballerina elegance and just have a purpose in that kitchen. Every step, every move is a purpose. They're like, what? You know, it doesn't make sense, but you know, it's kind of like the angel and devil on both sides. So
yeah, right.
Jeff, I have one more question, and I wanted to thank you for taking the time to doing the podcast with us. I know from the standpoint of Rage, because he did the documentary for Bocuse d'Or, The Contender. But how was your experience? How did you get there? And how that idea pops to your team or you to do for Grace for Netflix?
Thank you for asking that, because For Grace was never meant to be a documentary. When I was running the restaurant in the peninsula called Avenues, the gentleman who did the documentary, Kevin Peng, asked me, you know, could I come in and film you and how you conceptualize a dish and then take that conceptualization and bring it to the China and to the completion. And I asked him, I said, well, when is this going to air? What's the plan with it? And he's like, oh, it's going to be, you know, a few months. And I'm like, well, I'm getting ready to announce my departure as I'm going to go on and do my own restaurant. So he's like, oh, you know, that's amazing. Can I document that process instead? I'm like, wow. Yeah, sure. So I had one request for that before I said yes. I said it had to be raw and real. I said, if this goes anywhere, if it's a clip on your website, or at the time he was working at the Chicago Tribune, or if it's on my website and it's just a clip, but it has to be raw and real. So I don't want anything to be faked. I don't want to say, oh, can you say that a different way? Can you take this? We want you to say it a different way. None of that existed. So he agreed and we moved forward, and he just started filming from that point on. And that was months and months and months. Well, longer than a year of filming. And, you know, at one point when you saw where I kind of break down and tell my personal side with my family, that was everything that you see was raw. That was the first take that was real. That was in a day that he wanted to film me from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed. So he got me at 4 a.m. and we worked through the day, and it was, I don't know, 11, 12 o'clock at night, whatever it was. And he started asking questions. I never intended to tell that story. It just happened to come out. And so it was raw and real.
It's powerful.
Yeah. And I think that's what made that from, so from that point on is kind of what changed from it going, okay, well, now we have this story of this guy building this restaurant. We don't know what it's going to be, to now it's like a personal life story, if you will. And that kind of changed everything into, okay, well, maybe this could be a serious documentary. And then, so they finally finished it, and then they started gaining a lot of notoriety in the film festivals, actually worldwide. And then Netflix approached, and the rest is history. But we do right now. I mean, we're sitting with a camera crew following us, not for a documentary part two, but we're working on some things that, you know, could evolve into possibly some type of TV show, or
that's great.
We don't know yet, but we're back on track with not the same people, but different group.
Just one more quick thing is I do think that there's something really compelling about like the raw story, you know, for somebody to have a bird's eye view of like what it's really like. You know, I think that we've kind of gotten to the point where we don't really want to see so much like scripted stuff. I mean, just to kind of hear, I mean, even just hearing you talk today is like, you know, it's really interesting. And I think people, they really have a hunger for that more so now than they ever have before.
Yeah, it's too, you know, the reality shows, the chef's food TV, Bravo TV, I don't know, Top Chef thing. That's kind of, I was never into that. I turned down Iron Chef stuff. That was never my drive. That's never been my thing. I've always wanted it to be like, that's not reality. That's not our world. That's TV. Like, hire a bunch of TV personality people to do that stuff, because that's not what we do. That's not our world. You know, that's not a 16-hour day. That's our day of 16 hours. You don't see what it takes to get just to a certain level. It just doesn't happen overnight. And people see that stuff and think it's easy. And the young cooks see that type of stuff and think it's easy. But then when they step into the kitchen, reality hits them really quickly, and they can't handle it. They don't know how to handle it.
Good stuff. Rachel, I know, Rachel, thanks for hanging in there. I know you're kind of recovering
she
there.
She has so many questions.
I'm so sorry. I am recovering. I was
she's
really
usually
sick.
Super talkative. Yeah, she's
right.
A
I'm so
week.
Sorry.
No. It's okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to comment on that and say, yeah, I was wondering if, you know, if you had anything planned for the future, any sort of follow-ups to the Netflix thing, but you kind of already touched on that, because I've talked to a lot of people who have found Poor Grace on Netflix so inspiring.
Totally.
And I think that the rawness and the realness of it is what makes it so much more inspiring, and what really, you know, pushes people, and, you know, people watch that stuff over and over again. They can, mm-hmm. they watch it.
You know, everybody can relate to it. Everybody has a story. You know, I was just fortunate enough to be able to let it out on film. Like, everybody has a story. You know, I'm not special with it. Everybody has something. Mine was just able to be told in a platform that lets the world to see it. So,
yeah, people like see themselves in the stories sometimes, and it's almost like, they, you know, because they're just, you know, people only maybe see the only other dynamic of like what you do, which is, you know, all the accolades from the restaurant and your amazing culinary career. But beneath the surface, there's a lot of things that are parallel to the adversity that people would never expect that you would have gone through, you know? And it is inspiring.
Yeah. You know, it's great. I'm glad it was out. I'm glad it's there. And the amount of people that it touched, we had no idea that it was going to touch so many teachers, and the outpouring from the teachers were really amazing. We would bring teachers in from anybody who would reach out to us that couldn't afford to eat there. We would bring them there and eat and let them eat, because, you know,
that's amazing.
It's amazing.
That's
so cool. Teachers are incredible. Now, ask me that when I was in school. No way. But I mean, you know, they do shape your lives. If you have the right one, and they can push you and nudge you in the right direction. And that's all Ruth really did, was just push me in the right direction and made sure I stayed on track. And
that's amazing.
There you go. She's an amazing woman.
Well, Curtis, we obviously we could talk with you all day. And Chris, you got one more?
Yeah. I have a couple of friends that I sent a picture, and I asked you the question that pretty much everyone wants to know. And they are asking if you get cooks or like internship or something like that from different countries, is that something that is doable in your restaurant? Because we know that there's a whole thing about visas and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, eventually, right now, we're not accepting anybody because part of the situation, but right now we want to just get open and get to a level where we can start accepting stages and eventually, people from externs from school, interns from schools all over the country, worldwide. Absolutely. We'd love to have, you know.
Awesome.
I mean, part of what we should be doing is mentoring these young chefs. So absolutely, they should be spending time in kitchens like this. So
it's great to hear that.
It's a responsibility for me. You know, it's
awesome.
Well, Curtis, feel free to, in the coming weeks, as you're kind of going through, the restaurant and its launch, anything we can do to share with our audience, we're more than happy to do so. And I promise you, once things get back to normal, we make our way out to Chicago. We'll come and visit and support the restaurant. And we're just, everybody is huge fans and we love what you do. You know, we're inspired having a conversation with you. So thank you so much and very best in these coming months.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, thank you guys for the invite. And it's nice to meet you guys. And Rich, it's great to hear your voice and see you again. And,
yeah, you too.
You know, we'll be in touch. Look forward to having you guys out in Chicago once.
We'll listen to some Pantera. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks so much, Curtis. Take care,
buddy.
Thanks,
guys. Yeah.
See you soon.
Bye-bye. See you soon. Bye-bye.